Good morning. It's good to see everybody today. It's out. Glad you could be here. Appreciate you coming. Certainly glad that Jerry made it back with us, that he had a safe trip, and can't wait to hear all about the details of his trip. If you have your Bibles, we're going to look at Job 28, but before we go there, we're going to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Some lessons it's more preaching, I think, to people. Some lessons it's more just kind of sharing some ideas. I think that's what I want to do today. We're going to talk about wisdom today. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, starting in verse 20, where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? We talk about that a lot, the wisdom of the world versus the wisdom of God. And I want to talk a little bit today, just in general, about the subject of wisdom. It's not, again, something that's earth-shattering, but I want to challenge you to think about it a little bit and maybe view it a little bit differently. In Job chapter 28, he has a chapter devoted to wisdom. It's a really interesting chapter. It's a little different. In Job, they've been back and forth in the book of Job as he argues with his friends about why he's suffering and about God and many things. He talks in chapter 28 strictly about wisdom. And it says this in verse 1. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place for gold that they refine. Iron is taken out of the earth and copper is smelted from the ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches out to the farthest limit, the ore in gloom and deep darkness. He opens shafts in a valley, away from where anyone lives. They are forgotten by travelers. They hang in the air far away from mankind. They swing to and fro. As for the earth, out of it comes bread, but underneath it is turned up as by fire. Its stones are the place of sapphires, and it has dust of gold. I love the way here he's described a little differently than an environmentalist would describe mining today, probably. He's giving it a majestic feel, right? That there are these treasures inside the earth. And he says there's a mine for silver and a place for gold they refine. But as it is, it's out of sight. We don't see it. I mean, when we grow crops to grow bread or food, we see those crops. We see them growing. We see the harvest right in front of us, and we see the raw ingredients that makes it. But we don't see that with things like gold and iron ore and copper and silver, because they're dug out of these, he describes them as these secret places in the earth. I was looking up about mines the other day on Google, and the deepest mines are in South Africa, and they're 2.5 miles deep in the earth. It was describing the one, and both of those are gold mines, because unless the material is very, very valuable, it gets more expensive, obviously, the farther you dig, but that the walls of the mine are like 140 degrees that deep. It's so hot, and they have to pump cold air down there to be able to mine the gold. They've been mining out of this one shaft, one mine, since the 1950s. So imagine that you could be 2.5 miles above that where they're digging the gold, and you'd be walking up there, and as he says in verse 7, the path no bird of prey knows, and the falcon's eye has not seen it. You had a falcon flying around out here, and 2.5 miles below the earth, they're digging and mining gold. There's all these precious things that far below that you wouldn't even know it if you didn't know to go dig in this hole and go dig way deep in the earth to find it. Verse 8, the proud beast has not trodden it. The lion has not passed over it. Man puts his hand to the flinty rock and overturns mountains by the roots. I love that poetry there. Man goes into these mountains, these great crevices of rock in the earth, and we just dig it out. And even at this time, they recognized that, and they had mining that would go into deep parts of the earth, and they bring out these treasures of the earth. And when you're above it, you don't even know what's going on. You don't know it exists. And he says, verse 10, he cuts out channels in the rocks, and his eyes see every precious thing. He dams up the streams so that they do not trickle. And the thing that is hidden, he brings out to light. We even do that, right? You think of mining for gold or rivers. They take and dam up a river. And where water used to run, it's now dry and open. You can go in there and dig out the minerals, dig out the gold, dig out the things that are of value. That we block off huge amounts of water so we can get the treasures that lie beneath it. And all this is going on in the normal pursuits of man. And then he asks in verse 12, "But where shall wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its worth, and it is not found in the land of the living. The deep says, it's not in me, and the sea says, it's not within me. It cannot be bought for gold, and silver cannot be weighed as its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir and precious onyx or sapphire. Gold and glass cannot equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewels of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or of crystal, the price of wisdom is above pearls. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From where then does wisdom come, and where is the place of understanding?" And it's this idea, okay, let's say we can search out wisdom like we do all these other things. Why do we dig way under the earth? Because there's something valuable there. Why would we build a dam, an expensive undertaking, something to take great time and engineering and effort to reveal what's underneath a river or a lake? We do that because there's value there. There's something of great value. So we'll go and blow up mountains. We'll dig any canal. We'll do whatever. We'll go anywhere if what's there is valuable enough. And then he says, okay, where would you go then to find wisdom? I mean, if you could dig in the ground, if you could say, hey, I've got this map that says, where can we go find wisdom? It's right over here in the parking lot. Everybody bring their shovels. We're going to go dig till we find it. That's the idea he's presenting here of wisdom. He says, but the deep says, don't look here. It's not within me. And if you could go to the ocean would cry out, hey, don't bother pumping the water out of me because it's not down here either. It's nowhere to be found on the earth. Because nobody knows where it comes from. Where is the place of wisdom, he says. Verse 21, it is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Abaddon and death say, we have heard a rumor of it with our ears. You know, a lot of people think there's wisdom in death. That somehow after we die, we're going to have all these insights and gain. They've made movies about things like that where people die and they go and they learn all these secrets of life or whatever. And he says, don't go and die seeking wisdom, because he says, guess what? Abaddon and death says, we've heard a rumor of it, but it's not here. It's not in this unseen world where death and Hades and those things that we read about in the New Testament. But verse 23, God understands the way to it, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees everything under the heavens. And when he gave to the wind its weight and apportioned the waters by measure, when he made a decree for the rain and a way for lightning of the thunder, then he saw it and declared it. And he established it and searched it out. And where did wisdom came from? It came from God. And he figured it out while he was weighing out the wind. Now, we don't always think of air having any weight, but it does. Different gases, different airs have different weights. We know that scientifically now. But here's Job writes about it. He says, oh, you know, when he was making a decree for the rain and the lightning, when he was doing all that, he decided he would establish wisdom and he'd search it out. And he would find it because God sees everything. And he said to man, verse 28, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to turn away from evil is understanding. And if we just stopped there and left, it'd be valuable. If you just looked here at what Job says about wisdom. He says, look at all the effort we will put into finding something of value. We'll dig these gigantic craters in the earth. We'll go to any length to find something of value. But we ignore wisdom when it is only can be found in one place, and that is God. And if you want to know wisdom, first you got to know the fear of God. And the idea of what in fear there is respect, awe, appreciation, recognition of who He is. If we can recognize who God is, then we can have wisdom. But inherent to that, what's the problem? We kind of just know this inherently. What's the problem? We think what? That somehow wisdom on any level, on any place, in any subject, on any issue can be found somewhere other than God. And I think in some ways, Job is what Job's doing is really a mockery of man. Where will people go to get wisdom? You know, what mountaintop will we go to talk to the guru that has the answers? There are all kinds of children's fables. We have this book called by Bill Bennett, great short stories, books of wisdom. And it has a lot of these Aesop's fables and stuff like that. When the kids were little, we'd read it to them. And so many of them is somebody's going on a search for an answer, and they go find a king in the land who's the wisest, or they go up to a mountain and there's an old man living up there and he has the answers to life. It's always about what? Finding an answer. And it's always about we'll do anything. We'll travel. We'll go through mountains. We'll traverse snow-covered peaks. We will go to the depths of the ocean to find wisdom. And what Job says is you can't find wisdom anywhere other than God. Now go to Proverbs, because what I really want to do in this lesson is I really want to impress you with Proverbs. Because Proverbs is this book of wisdom. And let's just read a few verses here as he describes wisdom and talks about it. In Proverbs chapter 1, and turn there because we're going to read several passages here in Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, he says this. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Now, we understand that. We talk about that, right? When you're young and inexperienced, you need wisdom. You need understanding. There's a lot of different definitions we could use for wisdom, right? We could say it is this idea of applying knowledge. It's the idea of learning how to make good decisions. It's a working definition I like to use. It's the ability to see things from God's perspective. And from reading Job, that's kind of what he says, right? God is the source of wisdom. In other words, God sees things the right way in every situation. And all these words are used in the book of Proverbs. Understanding, discretion, prudence, being cautious, having insight, having discernment. All those are synonyms for wisdom. And so what he's saying here is I'm writing these things so you can receive insight, you receive discernment. You can see things the way God sees them as compared to what are some of the words that we'd say are the opposite of wisdom. We'd say things that are naive, they're foolish, they're lacking discernment, they're stupid. They lack sense. They're simple. They're careless. That's what we are without God. So Solomon here is seeking to help us understand that. And he's trying to help people who are naive and young and simple and foolish to know the truth. But then he says this in verse 5. So if you don't consider yourself that way, if I don't consider myself that way, I'm not off the hook. Because verse 5, let the wise hear and increase in learning. So you see, if I've come into this study today and I look at myself and I say, you know, I'm not as old as Jerry, but I'm pretty old. I'm up there in years a little bit. I'm a fairly wise kind of guy. You know, I don't know what God's going to really tell me. I've lived my life. I've kind of discovered wisdom by living. Then he says, whoa, wait a minute. You don't know anything. Because these words are for the wise. The wise need to hear these words. And they need increase in learning. And the one who understands, obtain guidance. That almost sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? Well, I understand. Okay, well, you're the one that needs guidance then. In other words, I'm understanding. I'm wise already. I understand a few things. I've kind of figured out some things in life. He says, okay, then you're the one really I wrote this book for. So whatever perspective we come at this, if we see ourselves as young and foolish, or if we see ourselves as older and wiser, or we see ourselves as well-learned, well-versed, schooled in everything, if we see ourselves as experienced or naive, he says it doesn't matter. You need wisdom. I need wisdom. We all need it. We need to go out right now and get the shovel out of our spiritual backpack and start digging, because we need something in its wisdom. What are we willing to do to get it? How deep are we willing to go? See, it first starts with a need, right? I need it. I have to have this. He says in verse 6, to understand a proverb, and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Ties it right in with Job 28, doesn't he? Now look over at chapter 2, Proverbs, verse 1. Same idea. I want you to see the parallel because I don't know if and probably Solomon may have been influenced by Job in his writings here. But he's really trying to get us to say is that what I'm doing in this book is I'm unlocking for you the things that Job talked about in Job 28. Those things that he said, you can't dig anywhere and find them. They're not in death. They're not in the ocean. They're not under that river. They're not under that mountain. They're not in the sky. But God is the source of all wisdom. Okay, the book of Proverbs is saying, here's the unlocking of that. I'm going to give you the wisdom of God. All right, chapter 2, verse 1. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, make your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and you search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. You see the tie-in? What he's saying is, son, look, if you recognize that you got to go out and you got to find wisdom. You got to seek her out. You got to go after it like hidden treasure. You got to seek it like silver, search for it like gold. Or are you willing, son, to go after wisdom the way you would go after those things, those treasures? Because wisdom is hidden. It's not hidden under the earth. It's hidden under our very nose right here in the Word of God. And as Solomon writes these things, he says, I'm about to unleash to you this hidden thing that you can't go out and dig somewhere and bury, that if you die, you won't have it. You can't get it in death. Here it is, what Job talked about. Here it is, I'm about to let you have it and let you see what it is. Verse 6, for the Lord gives wisdom, from His mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up wisdom for the upright, and He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of His saints. Where am I going to have to get wisdom? Only one place. That's from the mouth of God. That's what He says. He says, it is from His mouth come knowledge and understanding. That needs to throw us for a loop. Because I think really we feel like we can get wisdom from a lot of other places. You know, often people that I'll be in a mixed group of people. Some have had college educations and some not. And I've, especially in farming, you know, we're around a lot of people who just had farmed their whole lives. And here I was coming to work out of college. And we'd be talking and somebody would say, well, Darryl, where'd you go to school? And I'd say, you know, I went to the University of Florida. And then an old farmer would cry out and say, yeah, I went to school too. I went to the school of hard knocks. You heard that? There's a certain sense, in other words, you should look at me as wise because I've had a lot of experience in my life. And certainly some experiences can help to understand God's wisdom. But do we understand there is no wisdom in experience in and of itself? Because I've gone through something. I tell guys this all the time. Okay, the guys in prison want to tell me, oh, we're going to get out, and I've mentioned this before, we're going to get out and talk to kids. I'm like, what are you going to tell them? How to go to prison? Because when you get out of prison, that's the only thing you're going to have any expertise on. You know, but so just because I've lived through experience, just because I've suffered loss, just because I've started a business, just because I've made a lot of money, just because I've been broke, just because I've survived cancer, just because whatever, does not mean I have wisdom. And in fact, if I think those events gave me wisdom, then I'm misunderstanding what he's saying here in Solomon. I'm going and digging in a mine and there's nothing there. The only place for wisdom is from God. And so I can take the wisdom that I learned from God and apply it to an experience I've had. And I might use this experience to help me see that God's wisdom is true. But without the experience, it's still true. It's still wisdom. You see, if I take somebody to this, I'm bringing them the wisdom of God. Hopefully in life we get better at what? Taking the words of God in Proverbs and in all of His Word and applying it to situations that we run into. Sometimes when we do that, it makes us look wise. But in reality, we're all stupid. We're foolish. We're naive. We don't understand anything. It is God's wisdom. When we counsel somebody in their marriage, or counsel somebody that's struggling, or help somebody, or we're resilient, we get through something, we do it because we follow the precepts of God. We are giving exaltation to the wisdom of God. Nowhere else. I don't care what book you read. I don't care if Dr. Phil said it. I don't care who said it. I don't care what business guru said it. I don't care what Sikh said it. It doesn't matter. If it is true and if it is right, it is only true and right. It is only wise if it came from the mouth of God. Do you see how foolish we all look then? And that's what he's trying to get us to see. Where are you going to look for it anyway else? Verse 9. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity and every good path. Now remember, who's he writing to that needs to understand righteousness and justice and every good path? Well, it's the naive, it's the young, it's the simpletons, right? Yeah. Remember he said in chapter 1? Oh, but remember, it's also for the wise and those who have understanding. Do we not see? There is nothing. I don't understand righteousness and justice and equity in every good path any way other than God has told me what is righteous and just and equity. I don't know it otherwise. Verse 10, for wisdom will come into your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you and understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from the men of perverted speech. What men of perverted speech? They're coming along and offering what? A different wisdom. Hey, let me tell you how to handle this. Let me tell you how to do this. Where did you get that up? Well, I went over in my backyard and I dug it up there. I heard this from some guys I've hung out with. Or I just learned that at the School of Hard Knocks. Or I got this at the bookstore. You better run from it. Because what it says here is those are men of perverted speech. If their wisdom is coming anywhere than from the mouth of God, it's a perverted speech. It's not the truth. It's not right. I don't care how good it sounds to us as being naive or young or wise in understanding. We don't get it. We don't get it. And that's the danger, see? That's the problem. It's not we're going to read Proverbs and it's not we're going to say, man, I just don't understand those things. They're very difficult. They're very hard to figure out. That's not it at all. Look at chapter 3. Look what he says. Here's our problem. Here's what's going to block all of us from being wise. Every single one of us. Here's what we have to worry about. Verse 1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments for the length of days and years of life. In peace they will add to you. So look what he says. The other thing we see is wisdom in here is more than just thou shalt and thou shalt not. It's not just laws and rules. There is wisdom in God's commandments. God commands us not to commit adultery. There is wisdom there. What? God knows that that's not the secret to a happy marriage. God knows that's not the secret to sexual fulfillment. See, God knows that. So there's wisdom in every one of His laws. Because what? He sees all that. He's got it. He understands it. He is wise. Wisdom comes from Him. But it's more than that. This book is filled with, hey, look, stay away from this in general. And we are like, well, wait a minute, it doesn't say I can't do that. Oh, that's really just kind of a recommendation. It doesn't tell me how often I need to do that. And we miss it. And so there is wisdom in the commandments of God, absolutely. But there's also wisdom in, I'll say this, in the suggestions of God. We're going to read some passages, but Proverbs is filled with suggestions. Hey, look, if you want your life to be at peace and have more years, you probably ought to think about doing this. But we read it, we say, oh, it doesn't say I have to. And it's not a sin. You can't tell me I'm sinning if I do that. And so what happens to us? We cut short the years of our lives and we live lives, even in service to God, that's not filled with peace. Why? Not because we didn't keep the commandments, because we didn't listen to the wisdom of God. Because this is it right here. It's the wisdom of God. It's how God sees things. It's how God views things. It's how God understands things. And are we going to challenge God? Exactly. That's exactly what we do. Look at verse 4. So you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. If you'll listen, my son, to these things, again, who's his son? His naive child, like we would talk to, a young man. But it's also what? His wise older son. His older son who's lived right and has great understanding. These words are to him too. It's to all of us. You will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. Look what he says in verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. Boom, there's the problem. Why does he even need to say that? We read Job 28. Hey, look, you can't dig anywhere to find wisdom. Only God is the source of wisdom. And it's precious and it's valuable, but you got to go to God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. This is wisdom. I'm about to give you wisdom. Don't lean on your own understanding, stupid. It should say that afterwards, it doesn't. That's how I read it when I'm reading it to me. Don't lean on your own understanding, Daryl, stupid. Because we want to do that. We say God is the source of all wisdom, and then I get into a situation, and now I get into specifics where I can't go to a verse that talks exactly about my situation, and I lean on my own understanding. And by that, what? I lean on the understanding of Dr. Phil or Rush Limbaugh or whoever we extol in life, or Donald Trump or Barack Obama. It doesn't matter, right? I find somebody who agrees with the way I tend to think about it and tells me what I want to hear, and I follow that. And it's in a book, it's on a CD somewhere, it's in a podcast, it's in Google, whatever, wherever you find it. And he says, you know what, son, you know what, wise man, you know what's going to kill you, you know what's going to make your life hard, you know what's going to keep you from fearing me the way you should, is you're going to lean on your own understanding. And you're not going to listen to me. He says this all kind of different ways. Look at chapter 12, verse 15. We're familiar with a lot of these verses, but apply it this way. The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice. A way of a fool is wise in his own eyes. A way of a fool is wise in his own eyes, is right in his own eyes. He thinks he's wise. He thinks he's right. But a wise man listens to advice. Based on the first two chapters, what kind of advice does a wise man listen to? Only advice that comes from God. See, we get that confused. We read that verse and we say, okay, some joker over here tells me this is what I ought to do. So I listened to him. I went out and I got counsel. I listened. That's not what he's saying. You know, we're thinking about getting rid of our wife. We go talk to our buddy who's been divorced 10 times. Hey, man, what do you think I should do in my marriage? Well, I listened to advice. That's the advice John gave me over here. No, what is he saying? Same things he's saying in chapter 3. Don't trust in your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him. He will make your path straight. If the knowledge, if the wisdom, if the application does not come from God, from His Word, then what? Ignore it. Be afraid of it. Because somebody went and dug it up in a ground somewhere and it's not worth anything. It's fool's gold. That's the stuff that looks like gold, you know, but it's not really worth anything. It's fool's gold. All right, chapter 14, verse 12. Same thing in a different way. There's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way to death. Yeah, you just talk to your buddies and talk to the people you work with and talk to the people at the gym. There's a way that seems right to a man. I hear this, you know, it drives me crazy. I hear this all the time as news events come up. You know, I'm sitting at the gym stretching, we're talking to a bunch of guys, and invariably, you know, well, if that guy would have done that to me, I'd have shot him and strung him up and I'd have shown him something. I got a pistol in the truck to prove it. And Brad, we talk that way as Christians sometimes. Well, I'm going to tell you, most conservatives might think that way, and the NRA might think that way. And my buddies at my gym might think that way, and the Constitution might even give me the right to do it. But if that is not from God, then why am I counting that as wisdom? I wonder sometimes, it's totally off track, I wonder sometimes, do we trust in guns more than we do God? I mean, I don't know if I told you this before, but I had a congregation down south. I won't even get close to where it is, lest some of you might know who it is. And we had a guy at work release, and I contacted him about picking up this guy that we converted at work release, but at Lauderdale. And about picking him up, and they go, well, we read the regulations, and he can't be around guns, and several of us bring guns to services, so we're just not going to be able to get him. I'm like, who are you trusting in? Is that the wisdom of God or the wisdom of man? We can't leave our guns at home during services because we can't let this guy come in, so we'll just leave him out there where he can't worship with us. Brother, there's a problem. That's the understanding of men. That's wise men thinking we know it all because the Constitution gives us the right to bear arms. We better be careful about things like that. That's what I say. When I'm sitting around with a bunch of guys, one thing I got to make sure of is I don't know anything. We start talking about that, I don't know anything. No, worse than that, I know something is wrong. But God knows. Is that what the Scriptures tell me? Is that what the mind of God has revealed? Or is that just something that sounds good and we've just all kind of accepted as conservative, middle-class, white people? Because that's how we think about a lot of things. And we get off in all kind of things, and we don't go here anymore. We just stop coming here because it sounds good. Is it from God? Is it my understanding? Because there's a way that seems right to man, and it's ending death. And remember what he said, though, in chapter 2. But if you'll do these things, your life will be longer. Your days will be more pleasant. You see, there's a way that seems right, but it's not God. Then look over chapter 16 in verse 2. All the ways of a man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirit. I'm sure I'm right about that. I know this is the right thing to do. It looks good to me. From my perspective, that looks like the right thing. So, who cares about my perspective? What does God say about it? Can you help me there? Can you give me some insight? Can you lead me to let me hear from God what He thinks about that? Otherwise, I don't really trust what you say. And you'd be smart to say that about me. Because apart from this, I am not worthy to be listened to on any subject. Well, maybe cows, but nothing else. That's how we have to look at ourselves. I am so full of foolishness, and lack of discernment, and naivete, and I could think of a lot worse words to say about myself, apart from God and His wisdom and His understanding. Verse 25, same chapter. There is a way that seems right to a man, but in its way is the way of death. Says the same thing that he said earlier, right? And then way back in chapter 9, verse 8, look what he says. Do not reprove a scoffer and he will hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you. Do you understand this book is all about reproving us even if we think we're wise? It's God saying, you think you got it figured out? There's a way that seems right to man. It leads to death. You think you're okay? You think you got this? Well, then be careful. Don't lean on your own understanding. Well, I don't like that. What are you saying? I'm not smart? You saying I'm stupid or something? You saying I don't know anything? You saying I haven't lived life? How old are you? I chuckled. What did Cameron say? Back when I was young. I'm like, dude, when you were young, you are young. But see, we're all young in that sense here. You know, back when I was young, yeah, 30 minutes ago, I thought this. It's all there. It's all saying. But here's the thing that's going to get us all messed up. We can be wise. We can have great understanding. We can have great discernment. We can be great counselors to each other, especially those in the world, if we'll do one thing, quit leaning on our own understanding. That's the problem. is I listen to myself too much instead of going to God. And I've literally had people that have said to me, look, if you're going to bring the Bible into this, I don't know that we want to have this discussion. I'm like, well, you don't want to hear it from me any other way, I can assure you. I was talking to a guy about marriage or something. He has trouble with his marriage. Oh, you're going to bring the Bible into it? I'm like, dude, I don't know what else to offer you. My experience in marriage doesn't mean anything outside of this. Because what I found is you can go through something and experience it and you can still be dead wrong. But this is right. This is true. All right, we're running out of time. Proverbs 24, verse 5 and 6 won't take... You can turn there, look it over, but we know the verse, in abundance of counselors, there's wisdom. He talks about the need for counselors. So what I want to do is just go through a couple practical, specific things using Proverbs and how I think we need to do better with this. It was interesting yesterday at the graduation thing. I was talking to Jonathan, and we start talking about a new car. And, you know, when you talk about a new car around a bunch of guys, we usually start talking about, oh, man, I'd get that new Mustang or man, that extended cab 4, it's really awesome. That thing is just amazing. And so here we have this young man, and I think Justin might have been there when we were talking about it, but it might have just been me and Jonathan. And so I was thinking about this. I'm like, okay, Jonathan's thinking about just graduating from high school. He's trying to get into the military, not sure what he's going to do, and he's talking about maybe wanting to buy a new car. If he listens to Daryl, then he's going to be in trouble. Right? Because Daryl ain't going to buy a used car. Daryl's going to buy the best thing out there for whatever the bank will lend you. But then I go to the book of Proverbs, and I find chapter 22, verse 7. And it says different than what Daryl would say. That's why you shouldn't listen to Daryl. Because in verse 7 of Proverbs 22, it says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. So if he listens to Daryl, I'm like, bro, go out and put yourself in as deep a slavery as you can. That is so awesome to live in slavery. When I say to a young man something like that, though, hey, man, go get that new Ford extended cab. I wonder how much that thing is. Oh, $40,000. No big deal. Yeah, it costs more than your house. That's okay. You see, but that's what I'd like to tell him, because you know what? I'd love to drive around in one of those things. Or a Cadillac Escalade. I'd rather have that problem. But then I tell Daryl to shut up, and I say, what does God say about debt? Again, this does not say, thou shalt not borrow money to buy a new car. And I'm not telling you that's a command. Don't listen to me. What did this wise man who found this wisdom, where did he find it? Well, he dug it up in the mine somewhere. No. Did he find it in the deeps of the earth? No. He didn't find it from a guru on a mountain. He got it from the mouth of God. And the mouth of God says the rich rules over the poor and the borrower is the slave to the lender. Now, that's just the truth. And so we're going to be honest with people when we talk about borrowing money. It doesn't say you can't do it. But what do we have to... How should we look at borrowing money? We should look at it like slavery. Look, there might be a time where you say it's justifiable getting into slavery. Jacob did it. 7 years, right? Put himself in slavery to his father and to get a wife. Well, should have gotten the truck, shouldn't he? Been better off. But you see, so that's not what this. But see, I don't need a thou shalt not borrow money. I just need to listen to God. Because why? I'm simple. I'm stupid. I don't know anything about money. I don't care how rich I am or how poor I am. What I should come to Proverbs is, I should come with the mindset, doesn't matter how many, I don't care if I'm Warren Buffett, I should come to Proverbs thinking, you know what, I don't know anything about investing. I don't know anything about money. I don't know anything about this. But there's some wisdom here about that. And this says I should at least be very careful about borrowing, shouldn't I? That's what it says. All right, one more, and then we'll quit. I've got several others, but our time's up. So I think about, you know, DJ and Jonathan and Alex. And, you know, they might be moving out of home soon, if not in the short time, right? Graduating, getting out on their own. And I got to thinking, well, what if one of them came up to us and said, you know, hey, I'm trying to get out on my own and I don't have a lot of money, so it's hard without a roommate. And I got this girl I went to high school with, and she's real nice, and we're not dating or anything like that, but the two of us just want to move in together and get our own place. It can cut my rent in half. I won't have to go into debt then. Proverbs says, don't borrow money. And so what advice would we give him? Well, some of us might say, hey, dude, whatever it takes, man, save the money. Don't spend that money. You know, get the cheapest. You can room with her, fine, no problem. You'll be fine. You know, you're a good kid. You're not going to get in any trouble or anything like that. Is that what we would tell him? Well, we tell them, look, there was a time when society kind of looked down on that, but really, that's not going to be a big deal to anybody anymore. Or we take him to Proverbs chapter 6 and read him something like this, verse 27. Because I think this is where I would take him to. And it says, can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? You see, when some people read that, I've read this to people in prison before, and you know what they've told me? I can do that. I can carry coals around and not get burned. If I design my shirt a certain way and if I hold them a certain way, that's where our mind is too. Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not get scorched? Man, I saw somebody do that on YouTube the other day. You can do that. You see, that's the kind of advice. Or would I turn to chapter 5, and we don't have time to read it, and I could read him just the whole first 14 verses, and that is in verse 1, my son, be attentive to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, so you may keep discretion, and your lips may guard knowledge, for the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Well, if you don't understand, we're not going to have any problems with that, we're not going to do anything. Well, look what he says to him in verse 7. And now, so sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house. You see what he's saying? He's saying, there's more to the Bible than just don't commit fornication or adultery. If I live with that as my only standard, that's still above a lot of people's, but I'm going to get in trouble. And I'm probably not going to be successful. But if I listen to God, when God looks down in a situation like that, how does God see it? Not how does Daryl see it. Not, well, you can't do that, son, because your mother would get upset. Who cares? That doesn't matter in this sense. It doesn't matter. Or, you know, some people at the church might get a little... That doesn't matter in this sense. What does God say about it? God says, be careful when you get yourself in situations that are dangerous for you. Be careful, young man, simpleton. Be careful, wise, experienced man. When you get in a situation and you're tempted, don't go near the door of her house. That's how you handle it. Not, well, son, as long as you don't sleep with her, everything will be fine. No, I'm going to tell you, son, listen to my words. This is directly from the mouth of God. Don't go near the door of her house. Now, if you think, and I think, I know more than God about how these things work, then I'm stupid. Because I don't know anything about this. I don't know anything about it. But God does. And I can go dig up back here and get some advice, and it'll be worth nothing. Or I can listen to God, and I can see God's wisdom. And I can say, you know what? I don't exactly see why going near the door of her house would be a problem. But you know what? I trust God. Because he's smarter than me. And because I've decided one thing, I'm not going to lean on my own understanding. That there's a way that seems right to me, and you know what? It's not right. And those ways lead to death. And so I'm going to listen to the counselor of counselors. I'm going to listen to God, and I'm not going to do it, put myself in a situation like that. See, that would be the advice. And he could say, look, well, the Bible doesn't say I can't do that. You're right, it doesn't. But are you going to be a simpleton and a foolish man or woman? Or are you going to listen to God and His wisdom? So often we don't want to do that, right? We could go through some more. Just go through Proverbs. And when you read it, though, think of scenarios. Make yourself the counselor. Okay, I just read this. How would I counsel somebody now in this situation where I would apply this to that situation? If you do that, you'll find that your counsel is different than it would have been otherwise, and you'll find it's different than what other people are saying out there.